Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. As we continue in our series of interviews about Scotland, its culture and traditions, we start to discover its musical heritage with Alistair Fraser and Natalie Haas. In a reinvention of the classic musical marriage between big and small fiddles, Natalie Haas on cello and Alistair Fraser on fiddle have become well-renowned in their near-telepathic interplay and powerful music. Together, they play tunes both from the 18th century, the golden age of poet Robert Burns, to modern-day compositions by Alistair Fraser himself. You can hear an example of their music with Cameron's Caper from their album In the Moment, as we open today's edition of Radio Curious. I spoke with Natalie Haas and Alistair Fraser in our studios in Ukiah, California, on March 15, 2009, and began our visit by asking what was so special about coupling the fiddle and the cello with Scottish music. Alistair Fraser and Natalie Haas, welcome to Radio Curious.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. Very nice to be here.
So, Scottish music with the fiddle and the cello. Tell us about the background, the origin, and talk from your soul.
Well, Scottish music, the fiddle and the cello, I often like to kind of reduce things to fundamentals, you know. And fiddle and a cello, actually, if you think about it, is fairly fundamental. It's they've evolved together. They're both means of making music or making sounds by, as we used to say, drawing the tail of a horse across the intestines of a cat, stringing up a piece of wood to make sound. And that's pretty elemental in a way. Although I often wonder, you know, if it was how it ever got past the committee stage, because as an idea it sounds so bizarre, but it did, and it goes way back, centuries, the idea of making sound in that way. And so here we have a sort of high-frequency instrument and a low-frequency instrument that can produce a lot of sound and a lot of energy when combined. So there's a long tradition of fiddle and cello in Scotland, centuries and centuries. It was the dance band of choice. And then it kind of went, the use of the cello as the main accompaniment instrument sort of fell away for about a century and a half.
Why did it fall away?
Many, many reasons. The cello is an incredible instrument in the right hands, but people are often seeking more and more sound, you know, louder sound, more of the sonic real estate being filled in. So when the piano came along, it seemed to have more muscle, it had more going on. And so the pianos began to sort of relegate the cello to a subsidiary position. And this happened in classical music as well, with piano trios and such like, that the cello often became kind of reduced to almost duplicating the left hand of the piano.
Can we hear from the cellist, Natalie Haas?
What we're doing is trying to bring the cello back to the role that it had in the dance band as the rhythmic force behind the tunes, and just trying to get it to speak and fill all the potential it has, because it's an incredibly versatile instrument. We often see it in orchestras and in chamber music, and it can be very lyrical and beautiful, and that's how most people see it. And then it also has this great rhythmic side to it and chordal side, and so we're trying to put it back in that role, looking back to the 18th century and paying our respects to the tradition, because the Scottish music is very well documented, and there's if you look back to the 18th century, there's all sorts of written collections with written bass lines in them, so you can get an idea of what they might have done back then. So we're taking it back to that place and then adding a sort of modern twist on it.
Among the various CDs that you have here in the studio, what would be a song that would exemplify what you've just told us?
Looking at the sort of the what's called the golden age of the Scottish fiddle, when the cello was a main part of the sound, we could go and listen to a piece called The Duchess, and there's a whole medley on the Fire and Grace CD there, which kind of takes us into that 18th century place.
The Duchess, track 10 on the Fire and Grace CD, with Alistair Fraser and Natalie Haas.
Thank you.
Listening to a special hour-long edition of Radio Curious about Scottish music with Alistair Fraser and Natalie Haas. There's something special about the fiddle music in the Shetland Island.
Yeah, the Shetland people love the fiddle. The fiddle is everywhere. You know, people love the fiddle. As a fiddler, as I hold on to it, it's almost like a witching rod or a divining stick. You know, it starts to shake and it leads you to all kinds of corners of social interest, historical interest, takes you to many, many countries. And you can zoom in, you know, you can go to Scotland and you can go to the Shetland Islands and you find that they have a very, very strong fiddle tradition. You can go to Aberdeenshire, to Perthshire, to the big cities, to Edinburgh, down to the south. And they all have different ways of expressing themselves on the fiddle. And one of the great things about fiddle music is it, in its vernacular form, it actually imitates the way people speak. So you can play the fiddle in Doric, or you can play the fiddle in Gaelic, or you can play the fiddle in Lowlands or Northeast style. And if you go to Shetland, you find them playing the fiddle in a very Norse manner, so not a lot of Gaelic, and it's more influenced by Scandinavian hardanger fiddle type traditions. And the fiddle has been there for many, many people in different cultures, you know, as a great way to energize people, to get them off their chairs dancing in these long winter evenings that they have up in Shetland. They specialize in that up there.
What would be some cuts on your CDs that would be some examples of those?
On the Fire and Grace CD, again, you'll find a Shetland medley there, which is some just great high power, high energy Shetland reels.
Thank you.
us about how the two of you met. Looking at the two of you and watching your eyes when you were playing, it's obvious that you play well together and have for a long time.
Well, I first met Alistair when I was 11. I wandered into the Redwoods in the Santa Cruz Mountains where he had been hosting this fiddle camp, the Valley of the Moon Scottish Fiddle School, for years already. And I went with my sister, who's a fiddle player, and I didn't play anything except the cello. And at that time, his camp was one of the few, maybe if not the only camp in this country that offered the cello as a class there. So that's why I felt I had a place. So I went along knowing nothing about Scottish music. I had been playing Suzuki for a couple of years at that point, and just completely fell in love with Scottish music the minute I heard it. I have like maybe next to no Scottish heritage in my family. I'm from Menlo Park, California. So that was my exposure to Scottish music. And I just fell in love with the music itself and also with the community and the warm, welcoming spirit of the people at this camp, which is a very special place. And I've been going ever since. And that's how we met and began playing music there.
How long ago was that?
1995 was my first year. And strangely enough, the camp and I are the same age. It was born the same year as I was. So it's almost 26 years. It's about to have its 26th year this summer.
And you and Alistair have been playing together now for 8 years?
Probably, yeah, touring and playing concerts together since probably, yeah, 2000 or 2001 or something like that. It's hard to put an exact date on it. But
living on two sides of the United States, how do you get together to practice?
We spend a lot of time together. You know, and Natalie, of course, initially was in California when we first met. And gradually, I realized that Natalie was pretty special as a musician and with a cello to boot, which is something I'd been looking for a long time, is a free-spirited cellist who, if I said, you know, let's play these tunes, these great old tunes, and the cellist wasn't going to say to me, well, do you have the music? Because a lot of musicians are paper trained, and they have never gotten off the paper. And here's this wonderful young spirit who is just leaning forward and present in the moment and saying, "Sure, I'll play that." And so it was really exciting. And we, you know, we're on the road a lot. We're touring California right now, but we'll be in the East Coast next week. Then we're off to France and Spain, and we're all over the map, so we spend a lot of time together, and we seize the moment on the road. For example, in the next 2 days, we're going to be just going into hiding and working on the next album, making up new stuff.
When you play, you know what you're going to play, or you improvise as you go and exchange it with visuals between yourselves? How does that work?
Well, a lot of the tunes that we're playing, we've decided on beforehand what it is we're going to play and a little bit about how the structure is working. So all of the arrangements are us. We just come up with things in a very organic way. So we'll typically play the same arrangement from night to night, but within the arrangement there's all sorts of possibilities for I'm changing what I'm doing. Alistair's making up variations and changing his bowing and ornamentation, occasionally improvising melodically too, like taking solos and stuff, and I'm changing the chords that I'm playing, and so it's very spontaneous and a lot of fun.
And you've worked well enough together so it just flows. It certainly flows when we heard you last night.
Oh yeah, flow is what it's all about. I mean, that's one of the great beauties of playing music, first of all, but playing with someone that is kind of simpatico. You know, we're together, and I often say that Scottish music has an incredible range of expression for me. I live in awe of it, really. I mean, both the fiddle, the instruments themselves, and the music that I get to, the well I get to drink out of, which is, it can be incredibly nuanced. You can savor these fine, fine nectar zones, I call them, like just moments of beauty and extreme intimacy, incredible melody. I mean, the Scots have produced the most amazing melodies that people whistle all over the world and sing. You have that nuanced area all the way through to wild, raucous, rock and roll, grooving, fling your partner against the wall, take no prisoners, high energy, dance. And just as a human condition, you know, that it kind of gets all your chakras vibrating. And we share that range of expression, you know, so we can be rocking out 1 minute, and then we can be going for the finest, nuanced areas. And to meet someone like that is just a great thing in life.
Well, let's hear some of that wild and raucous music as the pace quickens through the high reel set from Fire and Grace. Thank you. Listening to a special hour-long edition of Radio Curious about Scottish music with Alistair Fraser and Natalie Haas. Alistair, what was your initial experience with the fiddle? How did it come to be part of your life?
The fiddle for me, I grew up in Scotland at a time when actually there was a lot of suppression of the spirit, and this has happened in many cultures.
So what year was this?
I started playing when I was 8, which would be 1963. And I was an extremely shy, introverted young lad. And I was growing up in Scotland at a time when we suffered greatly from something called the cultural cringe, which, and many cultures have this, whereby you're not sure what to do about your own culture. You're speaking in your own accent, and in my case that would be a Clackmannan accent. My parents are from the Highlands, my dad's from the Highlands, and he would have a Highland accent. But continually you're being told to speak properly, which means that you're supposed to speak in received pronunciation, which means speaking in the Queen's English.
Can you give us an example of the way you're supposed to speak and the way you spoke as a child?
Well, if I was to speak like this, then I'd be enunciating all my consonants, and I would be projecting much more efficiently. And for all the years I was growing up in Scotland, at least until I was 25, you couldn't hear the news being read on the radio in Scotland by the BBC in a Scottish accent. It wasn't allowed. You weren't allowed to broadcast in Scotland in a Scottish accent. And the same happened in England and in the various regions of Britain. Anyone who spoke on the BBC had to have received pronunciation. So if you transfer that to the violin, you get the same kind of thing going on. People had to play the violin properly, which meant that a lot of the idiomatic information, the grace notes, the ornaments, ways of saying things that are regional, that are loaded with dialect, or as I say, that are full of haggis, you know, unclean things crawling around that are really reeking of expression in a local way. That wasn't allowed. And so there's a classic story of the Scottish school teacher saying, "Dinny say dinny," you know, reprimanding her kids, you know. "Dinny," and then she realizes she's not supposed to say dinny. She's supposed to say don't. But so you had a lot of confused, tongue-tied people. Growing up in a culture that didn't know how to identify itself. And I kind of took all of that on board, and the fiddle gave me a voice. It was a place where I could find solace, and I could put a lot of work in and ask questions of it. And it's rewarded me ever since. And now we go to Spain, and I have similar conversations there with the Galicians and the Asturians and the Catalonians, who all want to speak in their own dialects, but they've spent years under Franco, you know, having their dialects removed. And so it makes for a very insecure populace when people can't speak in their own tongue. People get, they become insecure and they lose confidence. So as I was growing up in Scotland, we suffered from a low confidence and what I call a sort of a low Presbyterian blanket, a grey blanket that sat over the country and kind of crushed the spirit. And so you had things like the minister on the Isle of Skye burning the fiddles because it was anything that spoke of people kind of standing up and expressing themselves, having a great time, dancing, got the people who were trying to control things a little bit worried. So that would be the church and the British Empire. So you find by just following the fiddle music, suddenly you're questioning organized religion, you're questioning the influence of a controlling empire. For example, the Highlanders were all required, if they wanted to play their bagpipes and they wanted to wear their kilt, first of all, they were banned from wearing the kilt by the British. And then the British said, well, we need all these soldiers to go and fight in the Boer War and to go to India and to go to Hong Kong. And so they started recruiting Highlanders, who were a bit pesky anyway up there in the north. They were not easy to tame. So they said, okay, you can play your pipes and you can wear your kilts if you join the Highland regiments. We're going to form Highland regiments for you. But you all have to play the same grace notes. You all have to play exactly the same way. So you have military settings, military control of the bagpipe, which is like controlling the soul of the people. And there are many such instances. And there are lots of wounds like that that people don't really talk about. But that's where the music can lead you if you follow it.
It goes deep, but where does it come from? Where does the desire for the religious control come from in your experience?
Fear. It's fear. Whenever you have a body of people or a person trying to control, it's I think it's out of fear of being vulnerable.
The controller's fearing vulnerability.
The control comes out of fear. I mean, it's seizing power because they think that's where the human high is. You know, but there's another high that's available that comes out of being naked and vulnerable, and from not trying to control, and that's but that's pretty risky, you know. That takes a lot of courage. So it's easier to just try and control, to seize and to control, I think, and be ambitious in that way.
Earlier you were saying that you would ask questions of the fiddle. What would you ask?
Oh, many, many questions. You know, if I was playing for a dance in Blair Castle Ballroom, I would ask the fiddle, what were the women wearing when they were dancing? You know, what were the guys wearing? How did they feel? How hot were they getting when they were playing? How easy was it for them to move? You know, we play a lot for dancing, and if you can get yourself into the room and you can feel the heat and feel the bodies moving, it'll influence your bow arm. You become a better musician. You become more in touch with the fact that maybe in Edinburgh in 1780 they were wearing hoop skirts, so they couldn't be dancing the way that people might be dancing now. They'd have different tempos. They'd have different preferences. I mean, things like that, all kinds of.
So when you ask the fiddle these questions, how does it answer, or what does it answer?
It's no longer intellectual at that point. You become one with the instrument, and you can kind of. It can actually pull you down through the centuries if you let it, depending on your own experience, or maybe you just make up your own experience, but you kind of, you let it inform you. A lot of it, I think, is to play music in an organic way means you have to get out of the way. You have to stop thinking so much. You have to remove the judges that sit on your shoulder and say, that's not right, that's not right. You have to, the voices of teachers in the past, or you have to remove all that, and you just somehow embrace the whole gestalt of what it is to play music. I mean, playing for a dance and even playing concerts with Natalie, there are times when we get close to what I would call the oneness. You know, that there's you're no longer present. You're in it, but you're also out with. You can observe it, and yet you're right in there, flailing away, having a great time. But you're also observing, and that's a wonderful state. And it's hard to get there, but once you get there and you get the taste of it, then you keep chasing it.
Traveling the world as you do and asking the questions of local ethnicity, getting the answers that you get from the various communities that you visit, do you find that there's a particular thread that is found within the ethnic calls or the ethnic feelings that you seek out, that you ask about?
I think the thread that I follow, that I'm aware of in Natalie, is personal expression. You know, it's the way people relax when they actually get to say what they have to say, and they feel safe about doing it. And there are so many forces around us in this country, in the States, in many countries, where people do not feel safe to speak in a real genuine way, because they're worried that someone's going to tell them they're wrong, or that this is not appropriate, or this is not the way it's done here.
And you're talking about the United States.
Oh, it happens in the States, and people in the American South go through the same thing that I went through as a young Scot, you know, where they're being told to speak properly. And if they speak in their southern drawl, they're told to correct it because, whatever, you know, it's just not speaking correctly or the right way. So it's fun. I mean, you have to remember all of this happens, this questing, I think, happens at its best when you're playful about it and you're not judging so much as trying to put the fun back in there and get people smiling and feeling safe and laughing and goofing around and dancing and giving art the true meaning of the word, which is to be artful, to be playful. And Natalie and I like to do that in the way we form arrangements and look at each other and provoke each other.
What would be a song in terms of the feeling of what you were just explaining and the playfulness and so forth?
One piece that we're definitely being playful and kind of winking at each other and having a bit of fun is in a little medley we put together called Alien Kaylee, where we take the energy of a couple of good going reels and enjoy fleshing it out using different techniques. Thank you.
listening to a special hour-long edition of Radio Curious about Scottish music with Alastair Fraser and Natalie Haas. I'm attorney Barry Vogel, host and producer of Radio Curious. Well, Alastair Fraser and Natalie Haas, I want to thank you both for being with us on Radio Curious. And before we close, I have a couple of questions for both of you. One is, can you tell us about an interesting concept, idea, or understanding that you've learned lately?
Well, it so happens that we were just discussing this in the car the other day, that it was a talk given at the Boston Conservatory of Music to the freshman who just came in. And I loved this pianist who gave the talk, but he talked about how the Greeks regarded music and astronomy as two sides of the same coin. And so the astronomers were interested in the organization of external bodies, how they moved around each other. And music is the sort of organization of internal bodies, like great clumps of emotion and whatever else, however you want to call it, but the organization of the forces that are inside us. And I think that's just a really beautiful way of looking at music and the elusive nature of it.
The next question is, can you tell us of an interesting book that you've read lately?
I just read a book that's coming out as a movie pretty soon called The Soloist. It was interesting for me because it's about a mentally ill guy who plays the cello and went to Juilliard, which I did, and lives in Los Angeles and is homeless and befriends this LA Times reporter, and they form this really interesting relationship where the reporter is trying to save this guy and only to find out that he can't really be saved. But his life ends up getting enriched through this guy's music. It's really touching and interesting book.
And Alastair, an interesting book that you've read lately.
Well, occasionally you find a book that you read and you think, I got to give this to everyone I know. You know, so you start ordering them. And one such book that I read, actually it was around Christmas time, was it's called Three Cups of Tea by guy who just has fascinated me since then. Greg Mortensen's his name, and he grew up in this country, and he was a rock climber. He was a climber, and he was pitting himself against the Himalaya, and K2, I think he was climbing. He got lost, and he got parted from his Sherpa guide, and he got severely lost. He ended up kind of at the end of his tether, and somehow managed to wander into a village in the middle of nowhere. And I guess it would be northern Pakistan or somewhere. And was just, you know, dragging himself. And they took him in. People who had nothing took him in. And he spent days there as they sort of brought him back to life. And gradually he was able to walk around and look at the life that these people led in this village. And he went to the school, and the school was nothing. There was no building. And here were these kids sitting on the ground with no materials at all, at writing in the dirt with sticks. And he said to these people who basically had saved him, you know, if I can ever get out of here alive, I'm gonna raise funds and come back here and build you a school. And I love it because he did it. He stuck to his word, and that then became his life's mission. You know, it's just, I love stuff like that. He not only built one school, he's built something like 300 schools, especially for girls in that area, and he's going strong. And I just find people like that really inspirational. And he's got the Taliban working for him. You know, he gets them to go and put their rifles down and come over and help build walls. And they can't argue with him. So there's one man just making a huge difference where leagues of armies failed.
Well, Alastair Fraser and Natalie Haas, thank you both for being with us in the studios of Radio Curious.
Thank you for having us.
Natalie Haas and Alastair Fraser have recorded a number of albums, including their latest, In the Moment. The music we play today is St. Kilda Wedding from their album Fire and Grace. All of their albums are available at Alistair Fraser's website. The book Alistair Fraser recommends is Three Cups of Tea, One Man's Mission to Promote Peace, One School at a Time, by Greg Mortensen and David Oliver Rellin. The book Natalie Haas recommends is The Soloist by Steve Lopez. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious can be found on our website, www.radiocurious.org. They're also available in CD format. To get a copy, visit our website for further details. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your thoughts and ideas about our programming and enjoy hearing from you. Our address is Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. Our email address is curious@radiocurious.org. And the phone is 707-462-6541. You've been listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Thank you for joining us.